Ma wouldn't stand for cooking without pork on a Sunday.
I couldn't even imagine Cecile and Big Ma sharing a kitchen or living in the same house. Since there was no pork, I used what Cecile had. Butter, salt and pepper, plus the onion. It didn't smell like Big Ma's kitchen in Brooklyn, but it was the aroma of real food cooking. Now that I had our dinner underway, I wanted to take in Cecile's place of work. See what she was doing hovering over her machine quietly, carefully. From where I stood, stealing glances, it seemed like she was laying down puzzle pieces, picking up one piece of something and laying it carefully down on her equipment, picking up another piece and laying it down. Then she'd study the pieces, just the piece she had completed. She had pulled herself into her puzzle laying and had forgotten I was there. I could see why Vonetta and Fern were not allowed inside Cecile's kitchen. Cecile was fixed in prayer. I was allowed to be there, but I didn't dare clear my throat, let alone ask her to show me what she was doing. Vonetta and Fern didn't have the sense to be quiet. We spread the tablecloth on the floor and sat cross-legged as if we were eating Mean Lady Ming's takeout or fried fish from Shabazz. While Vonetta and Fern ate begrudgingly, Cecile cleaned her plate and left three blanched chicken bones. "This don't taste like Big Ma's," Vonetta said. "Surely don't," Fern followed. "We should have got pizza or shrimp lo mein." Cecile reached onto Vonetta's plate and took the thigh that Vonetta had left. "To me," she said, "that's gratitude for you." I didn't care that they were ungrateful. I told my sisters, "Get used to eating like this." Vonetta said, "I'm going to tell Big Ma and Papa." To them I said, "Tell." When we were done, Cecile handed me every plate after she'd eaten whatever Vonetta and Fern had left. "You started this mess, Delphine. You clean every dish and spoon." We had eaten with forks, but I wasn't about to correct her. I just took the forks while Vonetta and Fern disappeared into our room. At least I could look Pa in the eye and say, "Yes, Pa, I did what you said. I looked out for my sisters." At least I got Cecile to let me into her kitchen. Then she added, "And don't expect no help from me." I said, "I don't mind." She gave another humph and a head shake. "We're trying to break yokes. You're trying to make one for yourself. If you knew what I know, seen what I've seen, you wouldn't be so quick to pull the plow." I sort of knew what she meant, but someone had to look out for Vonetta and Fern while we were here. I stacked the plates in the sink and ran the hot water.
"It wouldn't kill you to be selfish, Delphine," she said, and moved me out of the way to wash her hands.
Then she went back to praying over her puzzle pieces. China who? Sister Makumbu gave Eunice, Hirohito and me two empty milk cartons each to fill with water from the hallway fountain. Today, our class was to take sponges that she and Sister Pat had cut up into different shapes and make printed designs on old T-shirts. We'd use red, black, and green paint, the same colors as the ink Cecile used for her poems and whatever flyers the Panthers asked her to print up. As Sister Makumbu readied the paints, I thought of all those colors, dripping and splattering on Vonetta's and Fern's clothes, and having to scrub them without a washboard. "Don't start anything until I get back with the water," I told Fern. Fern seemed off in a world of her own. Sister Makumbu clapped her hands, pressing me to get going. Fern will be all right for 2 minutes without me. I followed Eunice and Hirohito with a mind to hurry back. I had to admit, I like being seen as one of the classroom helpers. Vonetta and Janice were put out by the fact that they weren't asked to take a skip down the hall with Hirohito. They'd both raised their hands to ask if they could help, too. Although I didn't like Eunice much, we glanced at each other and knew the same thing. Our middle sisters were boy crazy for Hirohito. He was probably 12 or 13 and only saw Vonetta and Janice as pests he could both mess with and keep at a distance. Hirohito beat us to the fountain. As he filled up his cartons, I studied every feature of his face. I wanted to ask him how it felt to have slanted eyes, hair like pine needles, and coppery-colored skin. Which one was he more, Chinese or colored? If I were Vonetta, I would have at least asked him that, as much as she's always in his face. I would have asked him something interesting instead of, do you like short girls or tall girls? I knew my curiosity didn't excuse my staring or wanting to pry. After all, I certainly didn't like questions about not having a mother. So I scolded myself good while Hirohito filled up his second carton. I should keep my curiosity to myself. I shouldn't stare at his long black lashes and coppery-colored skin. Besides, I couldn't go from planning to sock him to asking him about being a colored Chinese boy in one good blink. But before I had a chance to look away, he caught me staring at him. What? I gave it back. Did I say something to you? Thank goodness you can't see cherries in a chocolate bar. I'd have been a red-faced rose if not for my Hershey brown complexion.
Take a picture, it lasts longer.
I was not looking at you, boy. Girl pride made me lie hard and strong. Eunice gave me a word too glare, but I couldn't let this boy think I was staring at him even if he caught me red-faced beneath my brown skin. I couldn't let this boy with slanted eyes and copper-colored skin think I thought a thing about him, because I didn't. And if you try to run me and my sisters off the sidewalk with that skateboard, I'm going to stomp on you good. We were about the same height, but I hadn't met a boy I couldn't throw down to the ground. But then I was taller than all the boys I knew.
I yelled for you to get out of the way. Can I help it if you're slow?
He was no Ellis Carter, Anthony, Antony, or the other boys who tapped me from behind and ran. He spoke calmly, with no fear of my boy-throwing abilities. Well, you shouldn't be skateboarding where people walk.
Girl, that's no skateboard,
he said, full of what I guessed was boy pride.
That's my go-kart.
Who cares, China boy? He gave me a look like he was going to drop both cartons and put up his dukes. One eyebrow went up.
China who?
I was glad he said that because my China you shot out right on time. Eunice jumped in and said, for your information, he's black and Japanese. Can't you tell the difference between a Japanese name and a Chinese name? I didn't like having my ignorance shoved in me, especially by the likes of Eunice Ankton. But there I was, not knowing a half-Chinese face from a half-Japanese one. I wasn't about to get a better look so I'd know the difference. Looking at that stupid boy got me red-faced in the first place. The last thing I'd do was own up to my ignorance and then apologize. I turned to Eunice as if Hirohito weren't there. I don't care what he is. He just better watch out when he's riding that skateboard on the sidewalk. Hirohito turned and started walking back to the classroom.
Go-kart,
I said. Forget you, Hirohito. He said,
forget you, Delphine.
Then I said quickly to get the last lick. Never thought about you. Eunice said, is that what y'all say where you come from? That's so corny. For Eunice's information, there was more to that rhyme. Swallow a snake, jump in the lake, come back home with a bellyache. It did sound corny, so I kept it to myself. I don't care. She walked ahead of me. If you knew about Hirohito and Brother Woods, you'd leave him alone. Then I got suckered into a schoolyard comeback I should have seen coming. What about Hirohito and Brother Woods? Wouldn't you know it, Eunice had hips. She made sure I knew that fact as she walked ahead of me. That's for me to know and for you to find out. Expert Colored Counting. Vonetta and Fern figured that since I talked my way inside Cecile's kitchen, I should fight harder for other things, namely to have a television set in the house. It was bad enough knowing our California vacation wasn't much to hang a back-to-school essay on. There was no Disneyland rides to write about, no Hollywood movie stars in the Safeway store to sign autographs, no surfing at the beach or shaking peaches or plums from fruit trees in the backyard. There wasn't even a long-lost mama hugging and crying at the airport. I soon saw my sister's point. The least we could have was a television set. Cartoons on Saturdays, funny shows after dinner, the evening news and true crime shows for me. And of course, the Mike Douglas show 5 days a week, because Mike Douglas always had Negro performers on his variety show. Outside of the Flipper incident, we didn't fight over TV, which would mean less noise to bother Cecile. If she bought a portable TV set, we could put it in our room and she wouldn't have to see us for hours. Then it would feel like a real vacation. Watching hours and hours of Get Smart and the FBI without Big Mom making us turn the set off. Once again, I found my calm, steady voice and brought our demands to Cecile at our next sit-down dinner. That's what protesters did. They brought their protest songs and their demands to the establishment because the establishment was in control. The establishment was someone over 30 years old who had the power. I didn't know Cecile's exact age, but she had to be over 30. That, plus her holding on to the money pod given us, had made Cecile the establishment. All we needed were some protest signs and an or else that wouldn't make Cecile mad enough to hurt us. Without an or else, protesters are just people with protest songs and demands who don't stand a chance of getting anything. The only thing Cecile seemed to care about were her poems and her peace and quiet. The only thing we seemed to care about was our television set. Armed with that, I brought up our sole demand and stood ready with our reasons, as if my Safeway ass were pressed to my chest. She said, "No one needs a television set." "We do," I said. "To catch our shows," Vonetta said. "Yeah," Fern said, "to catch our cartoons." "And the evening news," I threw in. "You could practically see the whole world in the evening news." "And Mike Douglas." "That's right. We want Mike Douglas." How else would we see Motown groups, James Brown, or Aretha Franklin? The Mike Douglas show wasn't the only place to find color people on television. Each week, Jet Magazine pointed out all the shows with colored people. My sisters and I became expert colored counters. We had it down to a science. Not only did we count how many colored people were on TV, we also counted the number of words the actors were given to say. For instance, it was easy to count the number of words the Negro engineer on Mission Impossible spoke, as well as the black POW on Hogan's Heroes. Sometimes the black POW didn't have any words to say, so we scored him a 1 for being there. We counted how many times Lieutenant Uhura hailed the frequency on Star Trek. We'd even take turns being her, although Big Ma would have never let us wear a mini dress or space boots. But then there was I Spy. All three of us together couldn't count every word Bill Cosby said. And then there was a new show, Julia, coming in September, starring Diane Carroll. We agreed to shout out, "Black Infinity," when Juliet came on because each episode would be all about her character. We didn't just count the shows. We counted the commercials as well. We'd run into the TV room in time to catch the commercials with colored people using deodorant, shaving cream, and wash powder. There was a little colored girl on our favorite commercial who looked just like Fern. In fact, I said that little girl could have been Fern, which made Vonetta jealous. In the commercial, the little girl took a bite of butter bread and said, "Gee, Ma, this is the best butter I ever ate." Then we'd say it the way she did, in her dead, expressionless voice, and we'd outdo ourselves trying to say it with the right amount of deadness. We figured that that was how the commercial people told her to say it, not too colored. Then we get silly and say it every kind of colored way we knew how. We gave Cecile all of our reasons why she should have a television set in her green stucco house. We even showed her how it would give her peace of mind to do her work without us bothering her. To our reasons, the establishment said, "Television is a liar and a story." But we weren't ready to give up. "The evening news comes on television," I said. "That's all true because it's on the news." She grunted. "And the weatherman gives the weather report. That's important." Another grunt. "And the monkeys do the monkey." Then Fern swung her arms up and down and bobbed her head like a go-go dancer. Cecile made a what expression. Flummoxed. Good old Fern. Fern had managed to completely flummox the establishment. And then we started singing our protest song, chewing away at her peace and quiet. "Here we come, walking down the street," like Davy Jones, Mickey Dolenz, and the other singing monkeys. The next day, when we came back from the center, we found a radio in our room, the cord wrapped around its plastic body. It was a show-nuff left-by-the-garbage-dump second-hand radio. Vonetta and Fern squealed as if the little colored girl in the commercial were standing in our room eating buttered bread. Civic pride. We've been learning about civics since the first grade. There was always a field trip to the fire station on Henry Street. We watched the same film about the firemen, policemen, and mayor who kept our community safe and orderly. The film's narrator reminded every boy, from Ellis Carter to the Jameses, the Anthonys, and every other pants wearer, that they too could grow up to be guardians of our community. We girls were reminded that we could look forward to becoming teachers, nurses, wives, and mothers. Poets were never mentioned. At the center, we had a civics lesson. We were being taught our rights as citizens and how to protect those rights when dealing with the police. Sister Mukumbu used the word policeman, while Crazy Kelvin, who filled in for Sister Pat, preferred to say the racist pig. He broke our rights down step by step, as if there was no time to lose. Any given day, a police car could stop my sisters and me on our way from the Safeway market and search our bag of groceries. We had to be armed with our rights. As the lesson went on, it seemed like all Crazy Kelvin wanted was to get us to call the police the pigs. He started with Hirohito.
"My man, Hirohito, who knocked down your door and arrested your father?"
Hirohito's face fell to the table. He looked worse than when Sister Mukumbu asked him to revolve and spin around the sun. He picked at a flaky piece of skin on his thumb. Normally I'd think, "Ooh, nasty boy. How disgusting." Instead, I felt sorry for him with Crazy Kelvin poking at him. Hirohito answered, "The police." Crazy Kelvin said,
"The who?"
Hirohito said,
"The Oakland police."
That wasn't good enough for Crazy Kelvin, whom we had to call Brother Kelvin in the classroom. He looked like a bony, big-beaked chicken going, "The who? The who?" It was like the time he shouted "black girl" at my sisters and me while we shouted back "color girl." It didn't take sharp eyes to see Sister Makumba was annoyed with her helper and, as usual, stepped in to put an end to it. Crazy Kelvin was supposed to talk to us about our rights, not to stand there going, "Da who, da who?" Big Beak Crazy Kelvin wasn't done. He said, "The pigs broke down the door of a Vietnam War hero's house. The pigs handcuffed him without respect for his rights as a citizen. The racist pigs then separated Brother Woods from his family because he dared speak the truth to the people." Hirohito tried to show no change in his face, but he was changing on the inside, where people change when they're sad or angry. He looked directly at me, then looked away. I felt like I was supposed to say something to him, but I didn't know what. Sister Makumbu thanked Brother Kelvin for being our guest speaker and showed him to the door. Fern tugged the hem of my top. "I don't like him, surely don't." I glanced Eunice Engton's way. I just found out what she'd meant when we were out by the water fountain. That Hirohito's father was in prison for speaking out to the people. Hirohito's father was what Sister Makumbu called a freedom fighter and a political prisoner. Although, now that I knew, I didn't find any satisfaction in having found out. Imagine, to have your father sitting down eating dinner or shining his shoes while watching TV. To have your front door blown off its hinges and the police rush in. To see your father in handcuffs led away. Hirohito didn't have to imagine. He knew. I'd been scared once, truly scared for Papa. It happened 2 summers ago. Big Ma had gone back to Alabama ahead of us to visit family and take care of her house. We'd packed up the Wildcat and driven down to Alabama so my sisters and I could stay there for the summer. We'd been driving all day, all night. Talk about being a long way from home. If we needed to stop, we found a gas station or a nice colored family to open their home to us. As we drove deeper south, down dark highways and even darker back roads, I felt like Dorothy in the Wizard of Oz. I told myself, "Delphine, we are no longer in Brooklyn." Papa had pulled the car off the road so we could catch a few hours of sleep. I remember Vonetta snoring on one side of me, Fern with Miss Patty Cake burrowed into my side. Somehow I managed to find myself snoring with my sisters and Papa. Then there'd been a loud rap against the window. Balls of flashlight ghosts had flown all around the back and front seats, all over our faces. It'd been a state policeman. Papa had rolled down his window and shown the state policeman his license and said he was driving his girls down to see their grandma in Alabama. The state policeman hadn't offered directions. He hadn't called Papa, "Mr. Gaither, sir," or "citizen," like the helpful police officer in our Civic Pride film. I heard what that state policeman called Papa. I heard it all right. I held on to Fern tight, afraid for Papa. Afraid Papa might talk back or fight back. When we had arrived at Big Ma's, I'd expected that Pa would have told Big Ma all about it. How we couldn't stop and pee anywhere we wanted to. How the state policeman had rapped on the window. What he called Papa. How Papa hadn't hauled back like Cassius Clay and socked the policeman's jaw into the next county. Papa could tell some stories. He speaks them so plain, you believe every word. I knew Papa would have entertained Big Ma. When Big Ma asked, "How'd the trip go?" Pod said, "We made it down, sure enough. You know, Ma, same old, same old." Rally for Bobby. When Sister Pat pinned the picture of Bobby Hutton to the wall next to the other revolutionaries, I learned who he was. I finally read about him in the Black Panther newspaper. The article reported how the people wanted to name the park after Bobby. The article also retold what had happened to him. I kind of remembered having watched the news with Big Ma a few months ago and hearing about the shooting in Oakland.
Now the shooting seemed closer, more real. Bobby Hutton was the first member of the Black Panthers, other than the leaders. He was so young, the Black Panther leaders, Huey Newton and Bobby Seale, made him get his mother's permission to join. He was also the youngest Black Panther to die for the cause. He was only 6 years older than I was. The newspaper had said how the police ambushed the Black Panthers while they were in a car and how the Panthers fled inside a house for shelter. That there was a shootout. That the police fired at the Panthers and the Panthers fired at the police. That when little Bobby came outside to surrender and took off all his clothes except for his underwear to show he had no gun, they shot him anyway. Over and over and over. That was this past April. 2 days after Reverend King was killed. After reading about Bobby Hutton, I begun to look around at the Panthers who helped out at the center, and the young ones on the streets, patrolling or passing by. I had looked real hard at them and had seen that they were teenagers or were a little older, like Sister Pat and Crazy Calvin. I couldn't stand Crazy Calvin, never called him Brother Calvin or went out of my way to speak to him. But I didn't want to see him get shot because he was wearing his off-the-pig t-shirt. Reading that article had made me both angry and afraid. Angry someone as young as Bobby had been killed, and afraid that if he could get shot for being with the Panthers, maybe it was too dangerous for us to be at the Black Panthers summer camp. After all, they weren't teaching us how to deal with the police for nothing. And I was tall for my age. No one would think I was just a girl going on 12. The police who patrolled the center could be chasing someone, burst in, shoot first, and ask questions later. Maybe we didn't have to come to the center to learn our rights and to have breakfast. If Cecile let me cook dinner in her kitchen, she'd let me fry some eggs or pour some cereal in her kitchen too. Being in Cecile's house might have been crazy. Her house might not have been smothered with love, but being in Cecile's house was at the very least safe. We were better off in that green stucco house with Cecile. What would Papa have said if he knew I was bringing Vonetta and Fern to a summer school where police cars drove by to see what we were doing? I was supposed to look after Vonetta and Fern, not put them in danger. I wished I hadn't opened up that newspaper. I wished I could go right on thinking we were having breakfast, painting signs, and learning our rights. I wish I didn't know that I was marching my sisters into a boiling pot of trouble cooking in Oakland. But it was too late for wishing. I knew full well what I knew. I could barely give Sister Makumbo my full attention. She said we would be attending a rally 2 Saturdays from today. Something about freeing Huey and naming the park across the street after little Bobby Hutton. Hearing Bobby Hutton's name had shaken me out of my thoughts. My hands shot up before I had words formed in my mind. I knew rally meant protest, and that protest could mean riot. After all, I read the papers. I watch the evening news. A protest was never a love-in. Sister Makumbo was still smiling when she recognized me. I bet she thought I was going to talk about the newspaper article or say something revolutionary. I said, "I'm sorry, Sister Makumbo, but my sisters and I can't go to the rally." I knew I surprised her because I'm not an I can't kind of person. I might as well have said, "We didn't come here for the revolution." Sister Pat said, "Don't worry, sis. I know Sister Nzilla. She'll let you go." I got over her saying she knew my mother when I barely knew Cecile. Besides, I have bigger fish to fry. I said, "It's not my mother who's saying no. I'm saying no. We can't go." Then Vonetta called out, "We can too go to the rally." And Fern said, "We surely can." Vonetta and Fern didn't know what they were saying.
They just didn't want to be left out of any activity concerning those Ankton girls or that Hirohito still wearing his same old Oakland Raiders jersey. Sister Mukumbu asked for respect and order in the classroom. We quieted down. She said she would speak to me later and continue talking about the rally and honoring Bobby Hutton and freeing Huey. Then she said the very thing that was sure to defeat me. She said, "We have been asked to do a special presentation at the rally." My sister's face is lit up. "We could perform a play, do a group dance, or recite poetry. Or if anyone has a special talent to display, you can do that too." I was sunk. Talent to display was enough to sway Vonetta and Fern. There was no way to keep Vonetta from throwing herself on stage after Sister Mukumbu said those three words. Vonetta is all ham and show. Any occasion, even a riot in the making, would have been good enough to perform at. Fern is no better. She sings like a bird, is cute, and like Vonetta, cannot resist the lure of applause and attention. I don't have anything to be vain about. I have no talent to show. Even if I did, I have no desire to throw myself before people for their applause. I dance because the lessons are paid for, and Papa feels all girls should dance ballet and tap. I sing in the children's choir because Big Ma makes sure we motherless girls enjoy all the pitying looks the church can spare, whether we want them or not. Later, during free time, Hirohito and the boys started doing karate and jiu-jitsu moves. The Ankton girls huddled to talk about what they would do for their special talent. From the looks of their gesturing, they would dance an African dance. The other kids just played. I expected Vonetta to run off and join the Anktons. But Vonetta told Fern and me, "We should sing a song." Fern added, "We should sing a song and do a dance." Before I could say why we shouldn't, they started. "We can wave our arms pretty like the Supremes. And wear our hair like the Supremes. Or wild like Tina Turner. And the Iquettes. Ooh, we can sing our song," Vonetta said. "Yeah, our song," Fern said. I pretended I didn't know which song they meant, but I knew. Just to make sure I knew, Vonetta and Fern sang the first three words to "Dry Your Eyes" on cue. "No," I said. They sang louder. Fern's voice sweet and high, Vonetta's drippy and dramatic. "No," I told them. "We're not singing that." They ignored me and belted out the heartbreaker part where the mother must leave her baby. Then they sang the la-la parts. By now, everyone looked our way, so I hushed Vonetta and Fern, whose eyes shone with life and sparkle. I had no hope of reeling either back to their good common sense. "We are not singing that song," I said plainly. To their why not pouting faces, I said, "This presentation is for the people, for Bobby Hutton and Huey Newton. It's not for singing about your broken heart to your long-lost mother." But they insisted on Brenda and the Tabulations. They insisted on letting the world in on their longing for a mother who wouldn't cook a meal for them. I put my foot down. "We cannot sing that song." "Can too," they started. Vonetta said, "And then she'll come to the talent show and see us on stage. And see how good we are." It didn't seem right that they thought singing and dancing would change Cecile into someone who cried for her long-lost daughters or fried pork chops and made banana pudding. Cecile wasn't that kind of mother, if you wanted to call her one at all. Her name might have changed. She might have been living on the other side of the country. But Cecile was plain old Cecile, just crazier and scarier than I remembered. I told them outright, "We could sing Dry Your Eyes like Brenda and the Tabulations and dance like the Iquettes. Cecile won't come to the rally and cheer us on." They said I was wrong about Cecile and wrong about what we could and could not sing for the talent show. I said, those people aren't rallying for a TV set. They're rallying to free Huey and to change the name of the park. The mayor, the judge, and the police aren't going to just say, fine by us. There's going to be trouble cooking at the rally. Vonetta sang, spoil sport, worry ward. Then Fern joined her. I said, fine, but I'm not singing with you. Sister Mukumbu said she needed help with something. Everyone raised his or her hand, but she called my name even though I kept my hand down. I couldn't say I was surprised. Sister Mukumbu said,
what's troubling you, Sister Delphine? Why don't you want to participate in the rally?
Sister Mukumbu, it's all dangerous. Just being here at the center is dangerous. She was silent for a while.
I see.
That meant she wasn't going to lie to me. I wanted to still like her. I couldn't if she lied to me. I have to look out for my sisters, you know. Sister Mukumbu said,
we look out for each other. The rally is one way of looking out for all of our sisters, all of our brothers. Unity, Sister Delphine. We have to stand united.
I was thinking alive. We have to be alive. Wouldn't little Bobby rather be alive than be remembered? Wouldn't he rather be sitting out in the park than have the park named after him? I wanted to watch the news, not be in it. The more I thought about it, the more I had my answer. We were staying home tomorrow, and the next day, and the day after that. We certainly weren't going to be in no rally.
Eating crow. The next morning, Cecile stood outside our door and said,
it's 9 o'clock. Why y'all still here?
Vonetta pointed to me. It's her fault. Fern joined in.
All her fault.
She won't take us to the center.
Yeah, she said we can't go no more.
Cecile turned to me.
Delphine, what did you do?
I spoke as plainly as I could. There was no use in speaking small-mouthed. I told Sister Mukumbu we're not going to the Free Huey rally 2 Saturdays from now or coming back to the center.
Why'd you tell her that?
It's dangerous, I said. The police shot a teenager for being with the Black Panthers. They could shoot Black Panthers and kids at the center. Cecile looked at me like I was stupid, but also with disbelief that I was her daughter.
Did anyone shoot at you, Delphine?
Her voice was calm and clear, not crazy. I felt stupid.
No. Did they point a gun at you?
No.
Did anyone put a gun in your hand?
No. Cecile said, y'all get dressed and go. They might still be serving breakfast. I couldn't believe she'd make us go back to a place where we could get shot. But then I returned to my good common sense. Of course Cecile wouldn't care if we got shot up by the police. I told Cecile, we'll go for breakfast. We'll go for summer school. We won't be going to no rally. That's just a pot of boiling trouble cooking.
Y'all too, get in there and brush your teeth. Wash your faces.
Cecile crooked her head toward the bathroom. As soon as Vonetta and Fern got up and left the room, she stepped in closer to me. I was genuinely afraid.
You watch how you talk to me, you hear?
I nodded in reply, and I was no nodder. She wouldn't accept my nod.
No, she said. You got a mouth, so I want to hear you.
I said, yes, ma'am. That old-fashioned word just crawled right out. Cecile grunted.
That's the problem right there. Here's Mammy. You sound just like her, like a country mule.
I think that set Cecile off more than my saying we weren't going to the rally. Me sounding like Big Ma.
Cecile went back to her kitchen, fussing up a full steam like she was talking to someone.
Me.
That she couldn't have us here messing up her peace of mind and that she couldn't work with us in her house. Cecile carried on a full conversation, on and on, as we walked out the door.
Crazy.
Vonetta and Fern were only too glad to be headed toward the center. They couldn't stop rubbing it in.
See, Delphine, you can't tell us what to do, Vonetta said.
Surely can't.
'Cause we're going to the center and we're going to the rally.
Surely are.
And we're going to sing our song.
And do our dance.
And you can't be in it with us.
But Fern didn't go along with Vonetta on the last one. Not that I wanted to be in it. Still, a small part of me was glad. Fern had always been mine. I wasn't in a hurry to go inside when we got to the center, but I followed my sisters when they pushed the doors open. Vonetta and Fern couldn't eat the late breakfast and rejoin Sister Mukumbu's class fast enough. I found myself dragging behind them, feeling badly for myself. No one ever called a take back eating crispy fried chicken. They called it eating crow, and with good reason. Not that I'd actually eaten a black crow, but with my words stuck in my throat and my eyes cast down, I knew what eating crow was. I knew that having to eat crow when you were once proud and right was like swallowing a hunk of tough, chewy crow meat that wasn't about to go down easy. Sister Mukumbu didn't make me feel like the nothing I knew I was. Her bangles jangled about her wrists as she welcomed us back into class. Everyone was practicing their parts in a play for the rally, and she said we had arrived just in time. They could use more actors for the class's reenactment of Harriet Tubman leading slaves to freedom. Vonetta was mad because Janice was to be Harriet Tubman. I knew I'd hear about Vonetta missing out on being the star of the play for the next 7 days. Later, after Sister Pat led us through calisthenics in the yard, Eunice came over and sat with me.
Thought y'all weren't coming back.
We weren't.
Then why are you here?
Eunice had a lot of nerve and a lot of mouth asking me why my sisters and I were back at the center. I had nothing to say to Eunice. I already felt bad. I shrugged, although I was no shrugger.
You were just showing off, telling Sister Mukumbu how you and your sisters weren't coming to the rally, like you're in charge.
For your information, I am in charge of my sisters.
Oh, yeah? So why are you back then?
The last thing I would do was tell Eunice Ankton that we were here because Cecile shooed us away to write her poems.
'Cause, I said.
I couldn't figure out why Eunice sat there with me. It was bad enough to feel stupid. I didn't need anyone sitting with me reminding me of it. My sisters were having a good time. Fern and the youngest Ankton girl, Beatrice, taught each other hand-clapping songs. Janice and Vonetta chased after Hirohito and his friends, but they were only after Hirohito. He'd zig left and right, escaping the girls each time they came within tagging distance. Finally, Janice managed to tag him and run. Vonetta was upset that she hadn't tagged him first, but that didn't stop her from cackling and squealing along with Janice. Janice and Vonetta were one and the same fool. Eunice beat me to making a sound of disgust. I said, I wouldn't hardly be chasing after no Hirohito Woods.
Me neither, she agreed.
I hated telling her I was only going into the 6th grade when she was going into the 8th grade. At least I was an inch taller than she was. Hirohito, she said, was going into the 7th grade. I told Eunice her dress was nice. Then she showed me the inside stitching. Once I saw the crisscross of her mother's neat hand stitching, I decided I liked Eunice Ankton. She wasn't the big girl who thought her clothes were better than mine, or the girl who sided with Hirohito Woods and made me feel ignorant for not knowing he was half colored and half Japanese. We were two older sisters watching our younger sisters playing games and running around making fools of themselves. We were both the oldest girls in our families, and we knew the same things.
Itsy Bitsy Spider.
Vonetta couldn't stop practicing her poem. Well, it wasn't hers. She got it from a book of Negro poets at the center. If she couldn't sing her song, she would recite a poem all by herself. It wasn't enough for Vonetta to say her poem, which was actually Gwendolyn Brooks' poem titled We Real Cool. Vonetta tried to be her poem. Since there was no applause from Fernamy the first time around, she started up again, as zombie-like as she could, to imitate the toughs standing around outside the pool hall. If Big Ma heard Vonetta and saw her standing like a shiftless bum on the corner, we'd be on the next plane back to New York City. Vonetta was into a groove and couldn't be stopped. She started up again, saying, "We real cool, we left school," as loud as she could, in case Cecile hadn't heard her. I would have done both Vonetta and Cecile a favor by giving her a swift kick, but I didn't care if Cecile yelled at her. I didn't care if Vonetta disturbed Cecile's peace of mind. So I let Vonetta recite on and on. "We real cool, we left school." Vonetta was a perfectionist, but only about certain things. Things that would get her noticed or earn her applause. Big Ma said Vonetta wouldn't be such a show-off if Cecile had picked Vonetta up more when she was a baby, hollering in her crib. I didn't need a flash of memory to recall Vonetta's crying. She cried loudly and a lot. Our door was open and Cecile was in the living room, lying on her beat-up sofa. Cecile could hear Vonetta perfectly well. Vonetta had said this poem 7 times so far. I was certain her aim was to say it 10 times each night, but Cecile didn't let her get that far. It took only 6 angry foot stomps for Cecile to make it back to our room. "Cut that crap out. That's not even a poem. I could have knocked that out of my sleep. You'd think Gwen Brooks was some sort of genius." Then she stomped away, this time into the kitchen. I heard her hands smack the swinging door hard. Back in the 4th grade, my teacher would have us lay our heads on our desks after we came in from recess. She would recite poetry to calm us down and get us ready to learn more science or history. Robert Frost, Emily Dickinson, County Cullen, and William Blake, all fine poets whom we should know, she'd say. Well, I knew a real-life poet. I didn't know how fine Cecile's poetry was, but I'd seen her writing poems in the kitchen and sometimes on the walls or on cereal boxes. Who else in my classroom could claim they knew a poet and that she was their mother? So on the afternoon that Robert Frost's horse had clip-clopped through the snow, I'd raised my hand and told the class my mother was a poet. Now, Delphine, Mrs. Peterson said. Nice girls don't tell their classmates lies. She'd kept me after school and told me she knew the truth about how my mother had left home and that wanting a mother was no excuse for dreaming one up. I couldn't leave the classroom until I'd written, "I will not tell lies in class," 25 times on the blackboard. And then I'd had to erase the board clean. Vonetta sulked something pitiful when Cecile told her to cut it out. Vonetta only heard that her recitation stunk. She wasn't thinking about how Gwendolyn Brooks was a great Negro poet and that Cecile, also called Nzila, was printing her own poems in her kitchen. Last year, Vonetta practiced her curtsying more than she practiced her wings and time steps for the tip-top-tap recital. She fell on her fanny in the middle of her solo and was miserable for days. Usually, I'd pick up Vonetta's broken spirits until she was once again crowy and showy. But now I let her sulk after she received no praise from Cecile. "Serves you right," I thought. Just to be evil, I rubbed it in with an insult. "I don't know why your lip is hanging," I said. You're just like her.
We both knew which her I meant.
I said that to make her feel mad on top of being hurt. Just like I know how to lift my sisters up, I also know how to needle them just right.
Am not,
R2. We did a few rounds of that, then a final not and two. Okay, Vonetta. Suppose you were going to be on TV. She perked up on that one. Playing Tinkerbell on Walt Disney's Wonderful World of Color. But it was PTA night, or school talent night. And your little girl, Ludie Bell, Fern added in. Ludie Bell, I picked up, glad to have Fern's support, had a part in the Itsy Bitsy Spider.
In her Itsy Bitsy Spider costume.
And she'd been practicing her Itsy Bitsy Spider song and dance for days.
Weeks.
A whole 2 months. The Itsy Bitsy Spider
went up the water spout.
I knew I could count on Fern to climb high with her tiny, sweet voice. Vonetta sat there defiant, unmoved, proving my point. It was like looking